My absolute favorite thing to do is to make bouquets. So a lot of people grow flowers for florists, for wedding designers. I started off with just making bouquets for farmers market, and that's still my favorite thing to do. I love to make bouquets. They just bring me so much joy, picking the different color schemes, the different flowers. And I'll tell you, I had zero formal training. I never took a class on how to make a bouquet, so I'm no expert. My flower bouquets are quite different than most people's because they're just kind of my own thing. So you're going to develop your own style, which is really cool because, you know, everybody's different and unique, and your eye for something's going to be different than mine, and the colors that you like together are going to be different than the colors that I like together. So I would encourage people that it doesn't have to be like this textbook perfect. I have, you know, a certain amount of this kind of flower and a certain amount of this kind of flower to make this perfect bouquet. Some people work better under that kind of structure. And if that works better for you, that's fine too. But for me, I'll just tell you a small testimony. Growing up, I was a troubled youth. And I was not good at school. I was not good at textbook things. I struggled with, you know, usually in school you have a class that you're good at. Like, oh, I'm good at math, but I'm not good at English. Or I'm good at social studies, and I'm not good at math. But for me, I was bad at everything. There was no, like, class that I was good at. So growing up, I got into skateboarding. And I was an okay skateboarder. I mean, I was like one of the only girls doing it at the time, so people thought I was really good, but I really wasn't all that great. I was kind of average. I always felt like just sort of an average person, which is perfectly fine. It's okay to be average. But then I started growing flowers, and I never thought of myself as being artistic. I cannot draw. I try to be crafty. It's not my, like, gift to be crafty. I'm just not really that great at artsy stuff, even though I like it. It's just not my strength. And then I started making these bouquets, and people are saying, wow, your bouquet is really lovely, and I like the colors that you put together. And I really feel like at 43 years old, I finally found the thing that I really feel like is a strength, like a gift. And so I think that's pretty cool that I might have to have waited 43 years, but I'm really thankful that I started growing flowers because I feel like I'm artistic now, which I never had that ability to do anything like that before. So it's an art, right? Growing flowers and making bouquets is an art. It's a beautiful thing. So I've really become fond of it. Now, I'm also a lover of cats. I love cats. And cats love flowers. This little guy is no longer with us. His name is Monty, and he died this past fall. But he picked flowers with me every day. Out in the morning, he was right there with me, walking the beds, always with me when I was picking my flowers. Every cat we've ever had has been like that. They love to kind of walk the beds with you when you're picking. So supplies for picking flowers, we talked about the, I put clippers there, but technically they're called snippers. Snips. So that you want to have this really pointy nose. That's why they call them snips, not clips. You want to make sure you have buckets. It is good to have rubber bands. We already talked about good times to pick, dawn and dusk, and the different flower types, which ones you want to wait till they're fully open and which ones closed. I just wrote again on here, and for those that you have missed it, you can access all of these slides at the AdAgra website under 2020 handouts on the menu bar, so you don't have to write all this down. But the cooler varieties that do well are dahlia, cosmos, sunflower. The ones that don't are the zinnias and the drying flowers we talked about. We've got straw flower, celosia, and gomphrena. We've got all three of them in this one, so those are all good for drying. Here's a little video of our cooler. This is in the spring. We have produce on the shelves and the flowers on the floor. And it gets pretty packed in there in the springtime. So our cooler is how big?
12 by 8.
We have a 12-by-8-foot cooler. Having a cooler is really a luxury. If you're able to have a cooler, it really makes for a longer life of the flower. It's hard when you don't have a cooler if you're wanting them to last a long time. Some supplies for making bouquets, rubber bands. I always put rubber bands on the bottom. And this is masking paper. You can get it at Lowe's. You can get it on Amazon. I get the 18-inch by 100? 1,000 feet, sorry. 18-inch by 1,000 feet. We also had these stickers printed off that have our farm logo. It has the Bible verse where we get our farm name, Genesis 2:8, and the Lord God planted a garden eastward in Eden, and there he put the man whom he had formed. This becomes a witness for us that every bouquet purchased has a Bible verse on it, and people look at that, and it's kind of a neat way to witness to people. You can use jars. So when I started off, I always harvested flowers and put them in jars and transferred them to market in jars and sold them in jars. And boy, was that cumbersome. It is hard to transport all these little mason jars with all these flower bouquets. You don't want to damage the flower. And I was just so set that that was the way I had to do it. I was not interested in doing it this way at all my first year. Then Kirsten Deisinger helped me because I struggled so much with how to wrap a bouquet. You would think it is so basic, but it is not basic. So I'm looking online. I even messaged Stanaby Farms. I'm like, show me how you wrap yours and all this stuff. So I have come up with a way that it kind of is the easiest, quickest way to do it. So I'm going to show you that in just a minute with this. So you can also do ribbons. You could put pretty ribbons on the jar. You could wrap them in paper and then put a ribbon or twine or something to make it look pretty. Some people, you'll see at the booth I have, I've hole-punched cards with twine. You could do that around bouquets. The unique style that I have, which is very different than a lot of people, is I say my bouquets are all flower with no filler. Most people make bouquets, they're going to put greenery in a bouquet. It is an inexpensive way to make it bigger. Green looks pretty. There's a lot of benefits to it, and I'm not saying that I wouldn't necessarily do it. It's just the resources that I have on our farm. We don't grow a lot of the filler stuff. And if I have a limited amount of space, I want to grow the dahlias. I want to grow the zinnias. I don't really want to grow the grasses. And they're pretty, and I'm not saying that they're not, but it's just for us and how what works best for us is to do all flower, no filler, and they sell really well. My bouquets go for $20 a bouquet at the market, and we sell out almost every market. I mean, really, we do. So it's kind of like, why change it if it's working? It's kind of where we're at with it, but it doesn't mean it's going to work for everyone, and it doesn't mean that's everyone's style. We have a flower farmer that does it for a living right where we live, and honestly, her bouquets are all filler, with very few focal flowers. So you would call these all focal flowers. They're all bigger focal flowers. And she uses almost all filler flowers. She uses a lot of greenery and a lot of the smaller flowers, like maybe cosmos. And her flowers sell wonderfully. So don't feel like it has to be this way. In my mind, there's a lot of different ways that you can make a bouquet. And yes, there's kind of the standard, like you need to have so many of the pointy, they call these the spiky look for depth of perception. You know, you want to have the small wispies and the big focals. And it does make a beautiful bouquet, no question. But this is just kind of what we've done because it's what we grow and it's what works. And I guess I just like big flowers. So I just put all the big flowers in there. And it seems to work. So that's our style. How to market your flowers? So this lady has an all-vegan, raw, organic restaurant in Louisville, Kentucky. She buys a bouquet every week. And she sets it on her counter. She says so many people ask her about the flowers. She tells people about our farm. We've gotten customers because of her. So you can market them to restaurants. You can market them to hotels. We even have a condominium of people that like flowers this year that's potentially going to buy flowers from us for their condominium. You see there, farmers market is probably where we sell the most. You can do a flower CSA. You can have a weekly pickup. You can have a bi-weekly pickup. You could have a monthly pickup. You could get really creative with it and just have a standard. You can deliver flowers. You could have a pickup site where people come pick up their bouquets. Really any local business. One time I had a lot of Lily of the Valley bouquets all at once, and I took them, the local health food store bought some, and I had like 10 left over. I literally walked across the street to this kind of outdoor shopping kind of place, and I went in to every shop and just said, hey, I have Lily of the Valley bouquets. Would you like them for your store? And everyone said no. The last store I went to was it was funny because it was like a locked door because it had like high-end furniture or jewelry in it. And I knocked on the door and the lady opened it and she bought all of them.
Oh, wow.
And I was so happy. Like, yay, I don't have to go home with any. So you just have to be, you know, resourceful. And, you know, every bouquet she got had a Bible verse on it. And I got to interact with her. And it was, you know, it's really kind of an amazing work. And they smell so good. So you know you're blessing her whole experience that day with lovely flowers. We just started selling to florists last year for the first time. So before it was strictly farmers market. And just people that would come up to me and say, oh, I have a birthday party. Would you make flowers for it? Or I have this. Would you do flowers? We tapped into the florist because I had a lot of ranunculus that spring. And our flower farmer neighbors gave me a few names of some florists that might like them. So we now sell to about 3 florists and about 4 wedding designers. And they just love the local flowers. And they're, you know, I'm getting to educate them about the chemicals that are sprayed on a lot of the flowers that they're getting shipped in. And they actually really want local. They prefer local. And I forgot to mention this to you all. For the dinner plate dahlias, you get $3 a stem. And the ball dahlias, depending on the size, is usually $2 a stem. So here's just a few more pictures of the bouquets that I make. Of all of them, this was my favorite color scheme because it has peaches and cream in it, and I love that one. But you see how I have like the oranges and the whites and the limes together, and then you have more of a pink, lime and white, and this is more of the darker reds, and you kind of come up with the different color schemes, and they look so pretty together. So different things to consider. So I did struggle with this at first, and it's really important to keep in mind, you don't want to go to a market and undercut people. Always, always keep that in mind. If you show up at a market, you're new there and someone's selling flowers, go talk to them. Ask them what they're selling their flowers for. You want to be equal. You know, it depends on the flower and the value. Of course, there's variables there. But you don't want to show up and start undercutting people when they're selling things at a certain price. Does that make sense to everybody what I'm saying? It's sort of a respect thing that you do for even your produce. You know, we have people that might come and they have full-time jobs and they're growing cucumbers on the side for a hobby and they're selling them for pennies. So we kindly go over them and talk to them about that and say, we understand you're not doing this for a living, but we are. And your food it has a value. And if you're selling it for pennies, then it decreases the value in it for everybody. So, growing food and flowers is a valuable trade and it's worth something. It's a lot of work that goes into all this stuff, and it has a value. So I'm very tempted often to price it down, price it down, price it down. And our Mennonite neighbors that are dahlia farmers, that's what they do for a living, they told me you cannot sell a dinner plate dahlia really for less than $3 a stem because that is the going price for them. And if you do that, it will undercut other flower farmers, and it will undercut the florist because the florists are also making flowers for a living. So you have to be mindful of that and be respectful of kind of just what the going market price is when you make your flowers and you make up the prices that you're going to do. So where, say, a dahlia is $2 a stem, the size I'm using for my bouquet, and I'm making a $20 bouquet, farmer's market's a little different than selling them to a florist. A florist is going to get a higher price mark for a bouquet than I am at farmer's market. So if I sell her 10 $2 dahlias, that's a $20 bunch, I would make my bouquet a little bit bigger for market. Because a farmer's market person, they're not going to pay, like, I would put probably more like 15 to 20 stems in there. I would never charge more than $20 at the farmer's market for a bouquet. No one will buy it. It's just a different market. Does that make sense? So you also have that variable there. I had a florist approach me, I'm telling her my bouquets are $20. She says, at my florist, I would sell that bouquet for $50. And I explained to her, at a farmer's market, you just can't get that much money for a bouquet of flowers. So there is a variation there a little bit. But overall, you want to make sure that you're pricing them according to the market and according to what the other flower farmers at the market are selling their stuff for. Yes, ma'am.
The lady that puts all the filler in, uh-huh, stems, does she sell the same cost as?
She does. What she does is she sells in mason jars, and her bigger mason jar with mostly filler is a $15 bouquet, where mine is all flower, like more flower, and I sell them for $20. So this size is pretty similar, and where I have more focal flowers, maybe it's, $5 more valuable, but I would say it's very comparable, the size. Yeah.
Can I have a
perfect.
To go,
sure. So what was said is ASFG.
CFG,
sorry. Say the whole name out again.
Association of Specialty Cut Flower Growers.
I always get that mixed up. You can join that. It's a little pricey to join, but you can join that, and they have a lot of resources for you. They will have a list of, like, a start point for how much a flower goes per stem. You can also resource the USDA, and they have a resource for pricing. So it's going to be the same with produce, too. Sometimes it's hard to know what to sell stuff by the pound for. And you can also resource, there is a resource in the USDA for that as well. Great resources. Thank you for that. That's wonderful. Okay. So figuring out what you're going to charge is important. Colors available is important. Types of flowers available. So this is where I wanted to share with you the different types that are recommended to grow. So we have the bold focal flowers are going to be like the dahlias, the sunflowers, and the zinnias. And then the filler and spike flowers are those of Celosia, Gomphrena, and Tuberose, Cosmos. Queen Anne's Lace is actually a weed on our farm that I do pick and put in bouquets, and people love them. So you see here, I do have some Gomphrena coming out. And so I do use some of that. Sometimes I'll use some of the Cosmos, but oftentimes I will cut Cosmos and bunch them all in one variety of, like, Cosmos and wrap them and sell just Cosmos alone, or I'll sell the Gomphrena just all by itself alone. So I tend to do that more than putting them in the bouquets. They seem to sell better that way for me, so that's why I do it that way. So here's another picture. Let's see if Larry, this is a video. Let's see if he smiles. So these are just a group. These are all going to farmer's market. And you can't hear me, but I'm just so excited. And Larry's got this very straight face the whole time.
You're
right. So I was going to show you a demo. That's Nicholas. Isn't that so pretty? So Kirsten Deisinger helped me figure out part of how to wrap a bouquet. So this seam, it's going to look really simple to you. Then you're going to go home and try it, and you're going to be like, why is this so hard? So I figured out a way to do it just really fast. I'm literally in the wash station. I have all my buckets. I'm picking them out. I rubber band and trim them. And then I put this on my leg, I should show you this first. So you're going to cut it in a square like this, okay? And then you're going to fold it like this. You put it here. And then you hold and you kind of make a triangle. And then you wrap it and you sticker it. Just like that. The sticker's not going to stick as well. But that is as easy as that. It took me like a year and a half to figure that out. No kidding. I have not measured it, but we can measure it. So it's 18 inches this way. Yeah. A lot of people I've also seen, what they do is they have an extra step in there where they do this and they use a stapler here. They'll staple it right here and then fold it over. But that's like another step in the process that's too much because I'm trying to hurry. So this works really good with a sticker. So it's a little messed up because I have tape on it right now. But so that's the best way that I have found to wrap them with the paper. And then, you know, you've got your logo there, and it looks really nice. This kind of protects the flower, too. So then in transport, what I do is you saw that last video. I have them in buckets. I can fit about four $20 bouquets in one bucket. And then we take these crates, which were given to us. They're plastic crates. I have some at the booth you can come look at if you'd like. You can fit three buckets in there to where they're tight. They fit in there very tightly. And then Larry is the master packer for market. So he puts all the produce boxes and everything first. And then all these flower totes go on the top of them. So, and it's worked for us so far. So hopefully it continues to work. So this is my favorite part of all the presentations. I decided this year to snap some pictures of some of the customers that we have. And we have been so blessed by some of our regular flower customers. And it just, people just are so happy when they buy the flowers. So I mentioned to you earlier, we give one bouquet away a market. At least one. Sometimes more. It just depends. And that has been a real ministry for us. A lot of times, I've made it a very intentional thing to learn the names of people, learn the names of your customers, and really become friends with them because they become friends with you. They come every week. You're going to be talking to them about their children, their life, their health, their struggles, and it's just a real blessing. So always remember why you do what you do. It's ultimately about sharing the beauty of God's creation and love with your community. So here's a few pictures. So this is really cool. These are produce customers that we've had for 7 years. Never bought a flower bouquet. The 3 years we were doing it, they never bought one. And that's totally fine. You know, some people are into flowers, some people aren't. Honestly, before I grew flowers, Larry never bought me a flower bouquet. He's like, why would I buy you flowers? They just die. You know, that's kind of his mentality. So I get it. You know, it's not for everybody. So one day this summer, they're like looking at the flowers. I'm like, are you guys going to buy a bouquet? And she's like, it's my birthday. And so I was so happy that they bought one. And he was like, you know, happy to buy it for her. You know, what was touching to me is he was probably the type of person that didn't want to waste money on flowers, but we've developed a real good friendship with them. And then when he goes to buy them, he was really happy to buy those flowers for her because he knew he was supporting us and he knows we're trying to do a good thing. And I think he found joy in buying her flowers. Who knows? Maybe for the first time. I don't know. But it was a really cool experience. So my next slide, Larry, I need to show them a picture. Of the little girl with the flowers. Imagine a little girl holding flowers. That's my next picture. So this is also a really cool story because my sister unfortunately divorced, and her ex-husband's family one day shows up at farmer's market, and I'm like, wow, I mean, I had missed seeing them. I hadn't seen them. It's like his extended family, like his cousins. And so they show up at market, and they start to become regular customers. and the mom works as a dental hygienist. And I just decided one day to say, you know, why don't you bring a couple bouquets to your office where you do your work? She's like, that's just a really good idea. So I gave her a couple of bouquets, and that's her daughter there holding them. She was really happy to get them. And then after that, they became regular customers. They would buy a bouquet for her office every week because she said she brought them to the office and everybody loved them and it just made everybody happy. You know, a lot of times in office settings, the morale can be low, right? Because you're in an office, you're inside. You know, a lot of people working don't really like what they're doing, or maybe they just wish they were home with their families or whatever. There's a lot of different circumstances. You put this big, beautiful bouquet of flowers in the workplace, and it makes people feel better. And so that was a really cool testimony. So this family, I love this testimony. They're regular customers. They buy from us every week. She lost her job. And so at one point, they were buying bouquets every week, consistently, every week. He was like, I love my flowers. Sometimes they'd buy two. And then one day they come and they're not buying flowers anymore. So I'm like, so how are you all doing? You know, what's going on? And she shared she lost her job. And I'm like, okay, well, that makes sense. That's why they're not buying flowers. And I'm like, oh, well, here's a bouquet for you. You don't have to pay for it. And they're like, what? And I'm like, no, it's fine. Just take it. And I think I gave them a free bouquet for about 5 weeks because they bought it every week. They wanted it. They just couldn't afford it. And so at the end of this market, this is so touching. So they made me this thing that was framed, and it was a poem about a farmer's walk through the garden that he hand wrote. And I have it on the wall at home. This is very touching. This gentleman, he's like my best client, a flower farmer. He buys buckets full. He'll come. And I'm like, Larry, here he comes, here he comes. And he buys so many every week. And I'm just always just so shocked. He has become a friend too. You will get all walks of life buying from you. And you will make a connection with people that otherwise would be kind of hard to do. And we basically, end of market, if I have any flowers left over, I text him and he will buy whatever I have left almost every time. Excuse me. This testimony is that my bouquet perfectly matched her jacket, which I thought was really cool. So I had to take a picture. And then this young girl, this is so touching too, because she follows me on Instagram and I didn't know it. It's one of those things where, you know, somehow she found out. She had told me she had been watching my flowers and waiting and waiting, and she finally wanted to come buy one. So it was something that she was kind of, you know, maybe a little timid about at first. But look how happy she is. She's just so happy. So this flower is from the compost pile. This was a tuber that I thought was dead that I went over to the compost pile, and I'm like, that's the biggest dahlia I've ever grown. It was so big. That's Linda's baby in the compost pile. So here's a few resources that are really good. Florette is a very popular grower, designer that does amazing work. She has a lot of videos on how to grow ranunculus, how to grow anemones, how to make a flower bouquet, what the best varieties are. I have used her as a resource a lot. I used our Mennonite neighbor friends probably more than anything. So it's good to try to tap into other local farmers that are growing flowers because they have experience, you know, varieties that work. They'll be able to help you. Also, I really like Bear Mountain Farm. I didn't put them on here, but they're a really good resource. They do YouTube videos on how to plant, like step by step by step, different varieties of plants. I believe they're in Washington or in Oregon, so the climate's a little different, but they do a lot of snapdragons and ranunculus and anemones and specialty flowers as well. So this book here is called Flower Color Guide. It's a more expensive book. It's about a $30 book, but I really like it because what it does is it actually lists every flower you could ever imagine in groups of coloring. So all the whites, all the purples, all the pinks, all the yellows. So if you're trying to come up with different color schemes for your bouquets, that's a good book. I just enjoy looking through it. It's so pretty. So I am going to allow, we still have about 10 minutes, so I'm going to take that time to answer any other questions that people have. Does anyone have any other questions? That's also a good question. So the question was, what would be a good budget to start, and have you ever shipped? So a good budget to start, it would really depend on what you're wanting to do. So if you're wanting to do it just to enjoy flowers for you and your family, or if you're wanting to do it to just take a couple bouquets to local markets, in order to go to a florist, you really need to have a good amount of flowers. You know, they're not really going to go for like three or four flowers. You want to bring buckets full for them to choose from. So if you're kind of wanting to go to that level, so it's going to kind of depend on where you're wanting to start out. Seed packets are pretty inexpensive overall, like in the whole scheme of farming and gardening. The seed packets are probably the most inexpensive thing. So if you have a budget to start, I would really start with like zinnias and sunflowers and just make it small at first if you're just trying to get your feet wet, to see how your ground does, to see how well you can, you know, maintain it and everything. But I would say overall, you could start with a pretty small budget. Worst case scenario, you can't afford the clippers. You get scissors. You know, there's ways around all this stuff. A lot of us that do this started off with not a lot of money. So, and we still don't necessarily have a lot of money either. So you kind of pick and choose what works. But that's why I would suggest those easier summer flowers to start, because you don't need the bags. You don't have to have all these special things to cover them. You just start, you know, real simple. The second question about shipping, I've never shipped flowers. Well, I take that back. I have shipped dried flowers as like gifts for people in my family. Dried flowers ship really great. As far as fresh flowers, I've never shipped, but you can ship fresh flowers. Stanabee Farms, I know, is experimenting with shipping flowers. So maybe you guys can connect and you could share with her anything more that you know about it. But certainly people do ship fresh flowers. I think it's a, you know, you just have to do it in a way that it doesn't damage the flower. Any other questions? Yes, ma'am.
I don't know if you went over it yet or not, but income producing, like what kind of income can you
produce? Sure. So for our little farm, what we do, I'll just give you our experience. So our first year growing, I'll be honest, I didn't think it would work, so I didn't keep track. I was just presently surprised that it worked and they sold. The second year I kept close track and I made about $7,000 on that little area that we grew in that I shared. And then the third year, this year, I made $17,500. And it's basically the same. We haven't expanded much in space. I would say what we've expanded in is doing more of the specialty flowers versus the, you know, the smaller flowers. So if that helps, it's an eighth of an acre. We made $17,500. Yes, ma'am.
Is that net or gross?
Yeah, so that is not including cost. Yeah, that does not include any of the cost of the tuber or the seeds. That's just what I made. Yeah. So math's not my thing, and neither is accounting. So I just kind of keep track of, it kind of helps me to see if it's viable or not. Now, the amount of work that goes into it also, I mean, this is a labor of love. If you really broke it down to how many hours, we're probably making pennies an hour. No joke. But that's not really why we're doing this. Did you see all those smiles and happy faces on there? I mean, certainly you want it to be viable. You have to pay your bills. And I'll tell you, Larry and I are doing this full-time for a living. We don't have any outside income at all. It's taking us quite a while to get there. It's been 2 years now we've been able to do that as a family, him and I together. So it takes some time, and it's a lot of work, but it's such a blessing because we're outside every day. We're together every day. I wouldn't want to be doing anything else, but we're not by any means rich. So does that help to answer the question? Yes.
So how much do you spend on
Oh, no, not even close. No. We save all of our own tubers, and so we actually, and, you know, a lot of my first tubers were free, and so, yeah, so we do not spend a lot of money on tubers. We try to save our own and trade and stuff like that.
With the corms, that's probably what we spend the most on with our corms for the ranunculus for this season.
It costs $2,000 for our ranuncula corms.
Yeah.
You get about three flowers. Yeah. So roughly you could make about $12,000 and spend $2,000 on the corums, not including the labor. So that's a rough, and that's a really high-end flower. So you're going to make more of a profit. The dahlia tubers are pretty. Now, I forgot to mention this, and this is very important to mention. You're going to have local American growers for dahlias, and you're going to have overseas grower for the tubers, to buy the tubers. You buy locally in America, they're going to be a higher dollar price, but they're going to be a better quality tuber. We can order from Holland, and you're going to get 25 tubers for about $20. They might be like a dollar a tuber, which is much cheaper, but the quality is not guaranteed. When I got them in a box, I was shocked. I'm like, these are what we paid for? They're all like clumps and broken and just like a mess because they use mechanical digging. So they're digging up these big clumps mechanically. So you order 25 and they're going to stick like extra in there because they know there's going to be damaged ones. And then you plant them. They grow a fine plant. They do. But you're not going to get as many tubers that are like really good viable tubers. So it's kind of a wait that you do. So do I want to spend more money on an American one and to support American growers, which is a good thing to do? But there, some of them are $5 to $6. Like the Marin that I'm selling at our booth are $6 a tuber, and online they're like $8 a tuber. So it's a lot. But if you think about that one tuber, you plant it, and I would say just estimating one plant, you're going to get like two flowers a day at least, like on a low end, through the whole summer from one plant. So that's a lot of, you get your investment back really quick with a dahlia. So does that help? Does that make sense? Okay.
Sell the tubers from cabs to cabs.
So the tubers are not like ranunculus. You can resell any tuber you want. The key is that you just want to, you want to research how much they go for, and you want to keep it around this. Like, for instance, I'm selling Marin at the conference, and they go for about $5 to $8 online. So if you went to search Marin tubers, every company you have will be somewhere around that range. So you want to fall somewhere in that range when you sell it. But there's not a patent on any of, well, I shouldn't say that. There are some that you have to make sure. So the etiquette in dahlia tuber sales, I would say it's really important to know your varieties. You can really mess stuff up. If you are selling Marin and it's not Marin, you're telling people this is a Marin dahlia and it's Nicholas. And then you get this whole group of people growing this and they're thinking it's something else. It can really mess stuff up in the industry. Like, you want to try to keep things true to their name and true to what they are and around the same price range that they're valued at for the industry, just sort of out of a respect thing. So there's, you know, I'm sure, of course, people make mistakes. It's not intentional. Say you mark something, you thought it was something else. I've had that happen. For instance, I bought some from Holland, and I ordered Cornell Bronze. For 2 years, I was telling people it was Cornell Bronze. I never resold the tuber, but I definitely told people in my bouquets that this is Cornell Bronze because I was new at this. I couldn't tell the difference. So I was seeing a flower farmer's video of Cornell Bronze, and I said, that doesn't look anything like my Cornell Bronze. So I sent her a picture. She said, that's not Cornell Bronze, that's Marin. And I'm like, oh. So I called the company that I got them from and explained to them what happened, and then he refunded me the Cornell Bronze. He's sending me them for free because it was their mistake. They mixed it up. So it happens, but there's not like a patent on them. There is... I forget the name of the farm. It's in California. Kay's Flowers, where they will develop new dahlia varieties. So that's possible. And I've never done that. I've never grown a dahlia from a seed, but you can do that. And when that happens, people, it's more of like their name is on it. They somehow name it. They brand it. And so like the flower farmers that are by us, the Mennonites, they, the lady that patented, or not patented, but named and created that dahlia variety, she lets them grow it as long as they sell it under her name. Does that make sense? So that's how that works. I don't know a whole lot of depth in that, but I know that they're not patented the same way as like a ranuncula is. Does that help?
So what you're saying, though, there are plants that are patented, and you probably shouldn't be selling them tubers, or
you can't.
I mean,
so generally speaking, though, Larry, there's not like a tuber that's patented that you can't. So I would say instead of the word patent, maybe more like parameters, like around the name of it. So basically how it works, and this is just really simple understanding of it, for just use the ranunculus as an example. So they have developed these ranuncula varieties, and it's taken a lot of time. So they, like a, what a patent means is you can grow it and you can sell it, but you can't take it and replant the corum and sell it again a second year. That's what that means. So with a dahlia, there's no restrictions on it as far as this dahlia, the one tuber that I plant, is going to make 20 dahlia tubers. There's no restrictions on me dividing that and replanting 20 seeds and then regrowing that flower and selling it. Does that make sense? So that's the difference in the two. Now, there are some ranunculas that are not patented, that you can dig up and replant and grow flowers and resell. And really, those are the only two that you ever really have to even really concern yourself with, because other ones were starting from seed. There's no real patent going on with any of that. Does that make sense to people? Yeah, it's kind of complicated. I don't really even worry myself with it that much because it hasn't been an issue. I think the biggest thing with dahlias is just trying to keep them true to the variety that they are. And if you don't know, you just say, I don't know the variety. That's okay to say. If you get a pretty dahlia, like sometimes I'll just have this random one in there that looks totally different than all the other ones, and I love it. And so if I'm going to sell it, I'll just say, I don't know the name of it. And that's totally fine to do. You don't have to know every single name. You just say, I don't know the name, but I love it. It's a pretty, we'll just call it a white dahlia, you know, something like that. Does that make sense? Yes, ma'am.
Have you ever tried long-stem roses, or have you ever thought about trying that?
I have not ventured into roses at all. So people love roses, and if you like roses, I would encourage you to try it, but I've never grown a rose. Yeah. Any other questions? So who here is going to grow flowers this spring? Raise your hand. Who here is going to call me if they need help figuring something out because they can't remember what I said here? Please, please don't hesitate. Teres has called me. I've called her. Kelly's called me. I've called her. I've called Kirsten. I've messaged Christina through Instagram before, and we all help each other because there's always questions that come up. And I'm really excited because I really want Daystar to grow flowers. So we are going to help Daystar get started on some flowers because there's a lot of people interested in that and a lot of students that want to do that. And I really hope that that happens this year. So I'll have a booth in the booth section. Please come look. I have tons of flower pictures, and there'll be dried flowers there and tubers there. And let's end with a prayer together. Dear Heavenly Father, we want to thank you so much for this day and for this opportunity that you've given us all to be here in Florida at this time. Lord, as we reflect on the blessings of the flowers and the garden and all the things that you pour out to us, Lord, we are just so grateful. I pray that you would help each person here, each child here, each mother, each father, each grandfather, to contemplate planting flowers for their yard this year. And whatever that looks like, whether it's a pot, a big backyard, a small backyard, a farm, whatever that looks like, Lord, just to plant some seeds and watch them grow. And remember that the story of salvation is in the flower. We pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.
This media was brought to you by Audioverse,
a website dedicated to spreading God's Word through free sermon audio and much more. If you would like to know more about Audioverse, or if you would like to listen to more sermons, please visit www.audioverse.org.